Well, well, welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, but who do you say I am? Today, we're building this pod on the rock, which is Peter, who's really Cephas, who's actually Simon, son of John. But before we take up our cross and follow the Son of Man, now that they've seen things merely from a human point of view, let's rebuke our favorite co-hosts, Marin and Barry. Good day, guys.
Rebuke.
Rebuke.
Indeed. Are you okay?
No.
What's going on?
I was just noticing the hindrance.
I have to read the thing, and you're in my direct peripheral
jostling,
vision.
Jostling like the microphone.
Going crazy during the intro.
Try to stay focused.
My goodness. Amateur hour. Oh, guys, family business. We're just going to keep moving. We're going to be talking about Matthew 16, diving more into the life and choices of Peter in just a bit. But first, Wizard of Oz opens next week, guys.
Woo. Yay!
November 21st, tickets are still on sale, but we've sold nearly 5,000 tickets already.
Wow, that's great.
That's awesome.
So pickings are getting slim, if you know what I mean.
Is that because of Marcus's special call out during yesterday's service?
Just shaming everybody?
No.
Saying that like he wants to beat Amy in selling more tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Rivalry.
Yeah, because she shamed him. She took him off the schedule. Yeah. She took him off the host schedule.
It's all for a good cause. It's all good.
Yeah.
If he sells more tickets than she did, she will never hear the end of it.
No.
Yeah. You can get tickets at gracechurch.us/theater. So
spelled either way.
Yeah.
Theater.
Guys, what's new?
What's happening? New? I'm coming in here very stressed.
Stressed.
So we're not going to get into all the details. You don't need to, it doesn't matter. But Liv was in a car accident on Saturday. She's fine. Wasn't her fault. Totally the fault of somebody else. You didn't know this?
No.
Oh, you hadn't heard.
You didn't tell anyone.
Well, I don't know. I don't even, whatever. Here, it's on the podcast for the world to know.
I only spent all of Sunday morning with you, but no, I did not hear.
I mean, whatever. It's, I almost said it's not mine to tell, but here I am talking about it on the podcast. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But the point is that this morning, since now everything's open, I spent a whole bunch of time on the phone with Allstate and with towing company and with all the stuff. And I'm just trying to like navigate this, and it's such a mess, and insurance is a pain and police reports and all that stuff. So that's kind of how I felt this morning, but that was combined with this unexpected like winter blizzard that we're now in the middle of with inches of snow on the ground and sub freezing temperatures. And I've been working to winterize the farm and get the barn ready to go so the animals can all be comfortable. But we're not entirely ready. And so now I'm scrambling.
Of course not. It's November 10th. Why would you be ready?
I'm scrambling to do that. And then Liv's in the show. So I'm like leaving this podcast to go straight home to feed the animals before I come right back to the John class that's going on tonight here at Grace. So it's just a lot of that. I'm a little stressed, but it's okay.
It's not great.
Well, it happens. Life happens. This is how it goes.
Back and forth for you lately.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. But
so
at least
Olivia's
I'm driving.
Okay. That's the most important.
She's okay. She's fine. And the car, no idea. It seems pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, but there was another car involved. They might come to the show.
Oh.
The person that the other guy, I don't think the instigator of the accident will come. I don't think he was really interested in hanging out with everybody, but we got to know the family of the other car. Yeah,
he, two cars guy.
He turned into her. She was just driving straight through an intersection of the green light, and he just turned, said something was obstructing his view. Your phone, maybe? I don't know. But anyway, he hit her, and then a combination of him hitting her and her trying to swerve then ended up pushing her into another car that was about to turn right. So anyway, but again, they might come to the show because they were like, oh, wow, interesting. That sounds great. And they heard she was the Wicked Witch, and they were all very excited. So because that's where she was. She was on her way to rehearsal. That's what.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, go ahead.
Two things about that. One, does something's obstructing my view hold up in court?
I doubt it.
Does that matter? Why was that part of the police report? To determine
by this
who's
point,
at fault?
It's like fifth hand that I'm hearing that. So I don't know what he actually said to whom.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to the guy. So.
Second.
Yes.
If those people come to the show, that will be at least the second incident involving police officers and a Grace employee that has gotten people to come to one of our shows.
Well.
Really?
Yeah. One year when I was in Les Mis, I was pulled over for speeding on the way home. And I was in like my makeups.
Stage
and the,
makeup.
Yeah. And the police officer was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I'm coming home from a show I'm in, Les Mis." And he goes, "Oh, I love Les Mis. Just go home."
You didn't get
no nothing.
Wow.
But then did he come to the show?
Yeah, he's like, where is it? And I was like, Grace Church. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna get my family. I love Les Mis. I'm gonna get my family to come."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You just never know. Yeah. You just never know.
Lord, use it all.
So anyway, yeah, I'm fine, but it's just a lot of running around and yeah. I don't know. And we have this new pig, Eileen. I think I mentioned her before.
Yes.
And she has more significant special needs than we thought. Aww. She's basically blind. And also has like a disability with her front hoof. So she is just really having a hard time. And the other piggies are finally leaving her alone. But like, it's going to be a while before she feels like super comfortable at our place. And now it's like deepest, darkest winter all of
a sudden.
She
seems like a pig that will never feel super comfortable.
Well, she might
not.
We
met her last week. Uh-huh. And she can't walk. She can't see.
Right. She can walk. She just, it takes a lot of effort. And she's got to like get up.
You and Olivia were both pushing
yeah.
her.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
About 30 yards into the barn.
We think she gets... You know, the other piggies will bully her or even just come up, sniff her, and that scares her or whatever. So she ended up in, like, the far field. And so we had to try to get her back to where it's, like, warm and safe and, like, close her up for the night. So that we had to, like, push her, which she did not want to do. It's a whole ordeal. So anyway, I'm fine. How are you, Maren?
Yeah, Maren, what's new with you?
I'm doing great. Doing good. I actually love the snow. I'm...
Oh.
Really?
No.
I think I always, every year, annually, love the first snow. And then with each subsequent snow, I love it less and less and less. But the first snow.
Has that always been, like, is that Chicago? Like, you love the cold weather? Like you?
Oh, come on.
Who doesn't love a Chicago winter?
No, I very famously hate the cold.
So what is it about snow? Just
the
pretty,
vibes.
Like, looks?
It's vibes.
It's very picturesque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me want to make warm food, like good, cozy food. I made I woke up and made chili for dinner because I'll be at the John class.
Uh-huh.
I won't be home to make dinner.
Uh-huh.
So I just made it first thing.
Yeah.
And I made like a Colorado style green chili. It's so
what
warm.
What does that mean? What's Colorado style?
It's like poblano peppers.
Put some avocado in it.
Masa. You thicken it with masa. So it's a stew, not a soup. You
not
should
this.
Try it out.
to consult a prior episode.
I love the first snow. I love everything about it except for the fact that my son still has not raked the leaves because he doesn't believe in raking leaves.
It doesn't even matter.
And now it has snowed on top of the leaves that
it doesn't
did
matter.
Not rake.
There's no point. I cleaned my whole yard on Saturday. By the time I woke up Sunday, the whole yard, I cleaned my yard and my gutters on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I woke up Sunday, it had stormed or whatever.
Mm-mm.
My yard was completely full and the gutters were completely full.
Now, let me ask you a question. Why did you do it before all the leaves were done?
Because I was like, I didn't know it was going to snow, but I was like, it's warm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Might as well do it now.
I want to do at least half of it in the warm weather
because
Saturday was nice. I didn't know it was going to be snowing the next day.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even matter. Jaden, don't even try.
No, I want him out there raking snow the minute he gets home.
I don't have a car that has windshield wipers working right now.
Well, that's not great.
Like they don't move. It's not like they just like smear water all over. They don't move.
Have
so,
you taken it to be?
No, I've been waiting. It's been that way for probably 6 months.
Oh, we don't want to know that.
But I usually just either don't drive in the rain or
drive really, really fast.
Stick my head out of the window or something.
What a grand plan.
But today was really, really hard.
Yeah.
Because it was snowing and there was ice on the windshield and all that stuff. So I'm taking it in this week.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Tried to hold
That's
out wonderful. As long as I could.
It's good for us to all know.
Yeah.
Something might be obstructing your view.
Yeah. The thing that's new with me, I have to share this because it makes me laugh every time I get it. I have two boys in school. And I don't know how you guys were or how Maren, how your kids were when they like went to the school nurse. But the school nurse nowadays, the school nurse nowadays sends you emails with like reports of like what your kid is complaining about or whatever. So anytime they go to the nurse, we get an email with a report.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually insane. It's like child complained that. Finger hurt, clipped fingernails, and sent them back to class or whatever. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
today, Lane, we got one about Lane, who's five. He's in kindergarten. And it said he was complaining that he felt full after he ate lunch.
Ooh. Better go home. Better go on home,
he
Lane.
Sounds to me like someone who wants to get out of class for a little bit.
The time logged was less than 2 minutes that he was in the nurse's office, just letting her know he felt full. Sent us an email about that.
Hey, you know what? Men have such a tendency to not get their health checked out. You know what? Let's give him props for doing it, for putting his health first.
I only have more questions.
Yeah.
He told his teacher he felt full and needed to go to the nurse.
He probably said, I need to go to the nurse. And mm-hmm. teacher said, okay. And when he got there, the nurse is like, what's wrong? He's like, my tummy feels full.
So,
and it was like right after lunch.
Did she advise him? Did she just have him lay down for a minute?
Here's exactly what it says. student had home lunch, so brought from home, and stomach feels full. Denies nausea and vomiting. States he doesn't need to use restroom. No other complaints.
Oh, lame. That's hilarious.
Wow. That's a good one.
Good thing we get those reports.
You got to keep those.
Yeah.
You got to keep those. My kids did not have a school nurse.
No?
They're a tiny little private Lutheran school.
So what happened? How would anybody know if they were sick?
They had a secretary. a chain smoking secretary.
So she just called you.
Bunko.
Like, hey,
Bunko,
you got to come get your kids.
Yeah. I mean, it was such a small school. Like, everybody just had everybody's phone number. And the teacher probably could have called me.
What if
me
they
directly.
Needed, like, a Band-Aid or medicine or something?
The secretary.
Man, yeah. Well, I would have loved to have heard what Desi's email nurse reports would have said.
No, so I got other reports about my sweet Desi girl. She she's always been my little activist, you know.
Yeah.
And so one time another school associate, another teacher came to her class and said, I need some strong young boys to help me carry in these boxes from the parking lot. And, you know, she was livid. Mm-mm. So she wrote this, like, manifesto.
Oh, yeah. How dare you?
About how girls can carry boxes, too. And another thing, why are girl push-ups called girl push-ups? I still have that. I still have her manifesto.
How old was she?
She was, let's see, she had Mrs. Smith as her teacher. So I'm thinking third grade. That would be third grade.
So she's like Milo's age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Milo
just strong
wouldn't
sense
even
of
know
justice.
Where to begin with things like that.
She just really wanted to carry boxes. She wanted to get out of class.
Yeah.
And the teacher came looking for boys and she didn't have a chance to leave.
Subverting the patriarchy at an early age.
Wow.
Good job.
All right. What week are we in? Two?
Yeah.
Week two of the micro series of Matthew, follow me, of the mega series Matthew, follow me.
Yeah, with the exception that we took out the first 3 weeks for our Christ Above All series in October.
But for all purposes.
Week two.
We're in week two of the Peter mini series.
Yes, correct.
Peter.
Nope, let's just move on.
Peter mini series. Yeah. All right, so Barry, what was the big idea?
Okay, so this part of the gospel, really, Matthew really focuses in on Peter and sort of his role as kind of a leader of the disciples, but also kind of like chief knucklehead of the disciples, where he gets things wrong or gets things confused. Last week we saw him walking on water. This week he has kind of one of his highest highs and lowest lows back to back. One of which where Jesus basically really commends him for correctly identifying him as the Messiah, the Son of the Living God, and so he tells him, hey. You know, I'm going to build my church on you, essentially, on this rock. Mm. And then right after that is the moment where, what?
Yeah, this moment.
Where Jesus is telling his disciples, guys, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to die. And Peter's like, that's not going to happen to you. And Peter looks at him and says, get behind me, Satan.
Yeah.
So it is about as far away as you can get from saying you are blessed to get behind me, Satan.
I resonate a lot with Peter.
I think a lot of people
do.
Yeah, I mean, I think on purpose. He's very, very relatable.
He needed a win.
He did get a win.
After what just happened with the water and falling in the water with his friends.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd say get behind me, Satan, is mild compared to ham-fisted. You've said that twice now.
I have.
Yeah, I was wondering about ham-fisted.
That's just an
expression.
I had to
Google it. What? I've never heard that before.
What is it with you guys having to Google
no,
my
I know
expressions?
I know what it means.
Clutching pearls, ham-fisted.
Oh, yeah, I know that. I know what that means.
It's hams like, for fists.
Yeah,
that's the expression. It's just like clunky.
Yeah, fumbling around.
Clunky,
yeah.
Fumbling. I'll never use ham fisted again. I'm so sorry. I'll
no,
use something
I liked
else.
It.
No, I think I'm gonna use it.
Okay,
week
good.
Three.
Yeah, this is how language evolves. I love it.
Favorite ham fisted disciple.
Week.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
So anyway, the big idea of the message is basically kind of it's almost twofold. We are all invited, I think, to see ourselves in Peter. And to understand that simple faith is where things begin. And Peter had no idea clearly where things were headed, but he still believed in who Jesus was, and that was where the church began. It was on a simple declaration of faith. On the other side is the reality that like it is very easy for us to misunderstand the means by which Jesus does the things that Jesus does, and his ministry, the way of Christ is the way of self-sacrifice, and that Peter again could not comprehend. And in a few more weeks, I just started working on it this morning, but we're going to talk about who's the greatest in the kingdom. The disciples are like wanting to know who's going to be the greatest, and as usual, Jesus inverts their expectations significantly. So
ham-fisted sons of
ham-fisted
thunder.
Yeah. Anyway, so
I mean, if you think about hams for fists.
And you're trying to do like delicate work. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. I think it's a perfect expression.
Dexterity with the hams for fists. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, like we said, this is two chapters after what we talked about last week, which was Peter walking on water.
For a bit.
Before for a second.
Falls. Yeah.
This story is also told in Mark 8, briefly, as well as Luke.
Yeah.
But neither of those include the part where Jesus calls Peter Satan.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Luke and Matthew both seem to have had Mark as a source. Like, that was kind of their starting point. And then they each brought in their own unique information, and they each had their own... They had one other source that they both shared that isn't stuff from Mark. And so, anyway, Mark was an... So that's why a lot of the stories will show up in multiple places.
And this is the first of three times, right, Jesus predicts his death.
I'm not sure actually on that one. How many times he does it, or when he does it?
Well, it's a number of times. Mm-hmm. The next time he does it is the very next chapter, Matthew 17. Mm-hmm. But I think he does it three times. But
he's alluded to it in other places, I think. But maybe this is the most direct that he's ever been. I mentioned geographically in the storyline, this is the farthest north that they ever get, and then they start moving. Everything else from this point on is just south to Jerusalem. And so this really is the hinge point in the book where things start moving towards the cross.
Okay. So who do people say the Son of Man is? In verse 14, Jesus asks his disciples, and their answer basically is like, prophet.
A prophet. One of the old ones come back again, or some other prophet.
And they named John the Baptist, Elijah, and Jeremiah, right? I was wondering if those names, like, was there any reason they would have named them? Like, there's a bunch of prophets. Is there any specific reason why they would have named those people? Like, because another thing that happens in Matthew 14, and we talked about last week, just touched on, is John the Baptist just died. Right. So are they saying, these people think you're these prophets come back from the dead? Like, what are they what do they actually mean by they think you are these guys?
Mm-hmm. The John the Baptist one is a little bit confusing, and I don't have a super clear answer. It's possible that it's just about the fact that there are no like photographs of people anymore. And so like Jesus going around teaching in the wilderness, like people might have thought, that must be John the Baptist. We heard about that guy teaching down in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And just an innocent mistake. I don't know. It's also possible that when he says, who do they think the Son of Man is, that they were trying to answer the question of who do they think the Son of Man, the category, is going to be, not who do they say I am. But anyway, all that to say, the other ones, Elijah and Jeremiah. Elijah is one of the more significant prophets narratively in the Old Testament. And Jeremiah is the prophet of... He's kind of the prophet of the exile in a lot of ways, and his prophecies were very much wrapped up with the sort of the destruction of Jerusalem and the grief of the people of God having lost their way. And so by implying that perhaps people think of him as Jeremiah or in the spirit of Jeremiah or Jeremiah come again, they think of him as a prophet in the spirit of the one that was there when the people really lost their way.
And Elijah didn't die. And this might come up again in next week's sermon, but Malachi 4:5 was one of those prophecies that the people of Israel would have held on to in those days. See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. So they were waiting on Elijah, which is why they would have mentioned maybe he's Elijah.
Yeah.
I thought it, I mean, usually I think there's got to be some reason they would have called out those people's names, but
well, I think the common thread is prophet. They're all prophets, and that meant something. I mean, to be a prophet was to be someone who is a spokesperson for God's truth, and that's an indication that the people didn't just think he was just some guy. They didn't just think he was a rabbi. They thought he was someone who had a level of power and authority. But what Peter says takes it to a different level.
You drew out the meaning of Peter's name.
Yeah.
Simon Peter, which meant rock.
Yeah. His real name, his like basically Hebrew name is Simon, or Aramaic name is Simon. His nickname given to him by Jesus, according to John, is Petros in Greek, which is actually Cephas in Aramaic, which is his name. So basically his real name is Simon, son of John, and Jesus and everybody would have called him Cephas in real life.
Okay.
And Matthew translates that into Greek as Petros, which is why we call him Peter.
Yeah.
Makes total sense.
Jesus said he's going to build his church on this rock. Right. And I couldn't help but wonder, and I didn't Google it, because I want you guys to tell me, just like every week. Did people have a concept of what church meant?
Great question. I did not get
into
that in the message.
Build my church on it. What does that mean?
In Greek, ekklesia, it is the word for church. In Matthew, Matthew has Jesus talking about the ekklesia multiple times. What is interesting is that that's a concept or a phrase that doesn't actually really show up in history until later in the development of Greek Christians. And so it's one of two things. Either Matthew is taking Jesus' Aramaic teachings and converting them into the language that his readers would understand, the church, ekklesia, as they would understand it. Or he did talk about his gathering of people in Aramaic, and Matthew was just trying to capture it in a Greco-Roman phrase. The word ekklesia does not literally mean church.
Yes.
You can explain it. Do you
according to my iPad.
There we go.
No, it means assembly or gathering. So upon this rock, I will bring my assembly or build my gathering, build my assembly. But we translate that into church.
Right. There were other ecclesias all throughout the Greco-Roman world. You could be in like a club. You could be in like a civic ecclesia. That was just part of the Greco-Roman world. But the church became sort of the ecclesia. Just like in the Old Testament, there were many messiahs, many anointed ones. But then it became the anointed one, the Messiah. It's the same idea. There were lots of different ecclesias, but that became the name of what this gathering is. It's the ecclesia. Mm-hmm. It's the church, and that's why we call it the church.
And he says, my church.
My church.
My church. My ecclesia.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's interesting because you asked us to think about like what Peter would have been thinking after Jesus said this.
Yeah.
And so I just sat there, and I thought about that for like 20 minutes. And
he's like, what's a church?
Yeah. That would have been my first question. Like, what's that? But weren't people already like gathering? Like they were already kind of following Jesus around.
Yeah. Again, we don't know what Jesus would have actually said in the Aramaic. So this is all a translation into Greek. But an ekklesia is not just a gathering. It's a gathering with a shared purpose or a common purpose. So it isn't just like anytime people gather together, it's an ekklesia.
Yeah.
It's we gather because we are part of the, you know, the Corinthian Leather Workers Association. That's our ekklesia. Yeah. That's what I mean. So it's like there's a specific thing drawing the people together.
And then I thought, man, Peter, you just fell in the water, like huge embarrassing moment. And this dude just, your Messiah just told you, church is, or ecclesia is going to be built on you. Like, how, right. how do you think, you said, how do you imagine what he would have felt like? What do you think he would have felt like?
Oh, he would have felt like the man. Are yeah. you kidding? Yeah.
And then gets completely owned.
Yeah. Well, I think you make a good point about him, you know, falling into the water. We talked yeah. last week on this show about how, you know, he probably was ridiculed by the guys, yeah. you know, getting yeah. back into the boat.
Yeah.
You think you're, you know, big shot, you can yeah. walk on water. But then, you know, the very next scene that we yeah. see of Peter, he's being, you know, lifted Jesus, or exalted yeah. to such a high place.
Build my rock on this church. And
yeah.
Peter's probably like, see.
Yeah, well, even, like, you didn't know that. The Father revealed yeah. it to you. Like, not yeah, to these other
right,
guys.
Yeah.
To you. Mm. Oh, he probably felt, like, huge morale boost. Oh, my goodness.
That's something interesting about
Ego
Peter
boost.
Is that I think it's cool. Like, last week we talked about, you know, Peter said or did something cool, but it wasn't because of what Peter was doing. It was because Peter was focused on the Master, right? Same with this week. It's like, Peter gives you the right answer. Like, you are the Messiah. And Jesus is immediately like, you're blessed because my Father mm-hmm. revealed that to you, not because you're smart and have been observant or anything. It has nothing to do with you, Peter. It is because of the Father, which is
yeah.
cool to me because it's like, Peter wasn't smarter than anyone else. He didn't have better opinions and he wasn't like more observant. Everything that's happening right here and in the last week is because of what God is doing through Peter, not because mm-hmm. of Peter's ability or anything.
Yeah,
like
and
that.
I think you hit the nail on the head. That's a major theme throughout Matthew, is anytime Peter or the other disciples are trying to lean on their own understanding or they're trying to do their own thing, that's when they fall flat. That's when they sink in the water. But anytime they set themselves aside and just fully trust in God, that's when miraculous things happen. That's when you do walk for yeah. a little bit on the water. So, yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's like you didn't just come up with this on your own. You listened to the voice of God, and that's where you came to this conclusion.
Which would have been cool enough without what came after it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call you a new name from now on. I'm going to give yeah. you a cool nickname, and yeah. you're the rock upon which I will yeah. build my church.
Yeah.
You said the powers of hell is actually translated to the gates of Hades.
That's literally what it says, the gates of Hades, yes.
Will not prevail against it. And you called back to the Anastasis fresco.
I had to. Mm. I had to. And it. I realized something. I realized that almost undoubtedly, that Anastasis tradition with the broken gates of hell were from this passage. Mm-hmm. That was absolutely where they got that idea in the first place. I'm sure of it. Like, I can't imagine it not being that way. And so
sure, yeah.
I was like, okay, how do I talk about the gates of hell, Hades, the gates of the realm of the dead, not being mm-hmm. able to prevail against the
Without,
church? And I was like, yeah, well, I'm,
you have to.
I mean, that's it's in everybody's mind
yeah.
from the last month. So I had to, yeah.
Jesus says he's going to give the keys of heaven to Peter.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that even mean?
Keys of the kingdom.
Oh, yeah. Keys of the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? To have the keys of the kingdom.
It's a good question.
That's a very good question.
It's not like you'll be a part of it. It's like you got the keys.
Right. Mm-hmm. To me, I see it as a form of authority of God essentially saying, I'm sharing authority with you, and that's backed up by what he says right after that, which I barely glanced at in the message because I was like, there's no way to get into all this and still cover all this in 30 minutes. But he says, and I'll say it literally, he says, whatever you bind or like tie up on earth will have been bound in heaven, or in heaven, whatever you loose or untie on earth will have been loosed in heaven. It's the weirdest verb structure ever, but he's basically... To cut to the chase, he's basically saying, you have now authority, or will have authority, as my representative to enact God's will on the earth. That's what the kingdom is. It's,
yeah.
it's God's will, like, completed. And so for him to have the keys to the kingdom, for him to have the ability, and it's not him, it's the church that he's referring to here, I think. It's like him, but by extension, like the gathering,
yeah.
the church will have the authority to affect God's will on the earth. That's wild.
Yeah.
Especially saying that to Rocky.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like being given a key to any city.
Mm-hmm.
And later in the New Testament, we're told that we are citizens of heaven, right? Like that's where our real citizenship lies. And so I don't know. That's what I think of when I think of keys to the kingdom. Like, you are a citizen. You're a fellow citizen. I'm going to give you keys to the kingdom. Mm.
And then the literal translation, the gates of Hades, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got stuck on the word gates. I'm reading all these fantasy books right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, gates. Like, gates are obviously to either keep something in or keep something out, but mm-hmm. they're defensive.
Yes.
And so after I was thinking about the fresco, and I know it's in Christian songs and stuff, but gates are meant to be a defensive thing. Like,
right.
The gates of hell will not prevail. What? That's like a children's song or something.
Okay. a children's song about the gates
Sounds
of hell.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
I do not recall.
I don't remember.
And we're storming the gates of hell. We're going to knock them all down.
But if the gates are hell, if the gates are defensive, yes. I was thinking, like, what's that say about the territory that we or the church is meant to enter into?
Right. That is exactly it. Thank you for asking that question, because that's and I mentioned this in the message briefly, but that's what I think this is all about. Like, the church is assaulting the gates of Hades.
Yeah.
Like, we are
taking
on the
offense.
Yeah, we're going into death, and we are bringing life. Mm. We are joining Jesus,
it's broken places,
in ripping the dead out of their graves and bringing them back to life. Like, that's who we're here. And I mentioned, like, once Peter got it and actually had the spirit of Christ within him, he raised the dead. Like, it actually happened. I mean,
the NLT, you said it says powers of hell, right? And when I thought of that, I thought about like demons and like something that's more offensive. But as soon as you said the word gates, I'm like thinking about all these
And this is I rarely like
playing defense.
I rarely would say the NLT is wrong. Usually I would just say I disagree with it. But here it actually says all the powers
New
of hell,
King James.
All the powers of hell will not conquer it.
Yeah.
And so the powers of hell, which are not the powers of hell, they're the powers, the gates of Hades, will not conquer it. That's them being in the offensive.
Yeah.
But it's the other way
it's
around.
It's the other way around.
Right.
Yeah.
So I respectfully disagree with the NLT on this, on their choices here. Because I think it really is important to consider, what does it mean for us to be a body, a group of people who have been commissioned with the authority of God's kingdom to assault the gates of death? Like, that's what we're here to do, and that's pretty epic. And it's so different than just us hunkering down and not getting defeated by a bunch of demons with pitchforks. Yeah. I'm talking like, no, we are on the offensive against death.
Yeah.
You shall not pass.
Exactly.
And a quick shout out to the New King James, which does say Gates of Hades.
Of course.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Shout out. All right. Now to my favorite part of this passage, the get behind me, Satan.
Yeah.
Am I wrong for thinking that this is probably the most embarrassing thing that could happen to somebody who's been like following this guy for, I don't know how long, but that guy just said you were Satan.
Right. Here's one thing I'll point out. Matthew does not tell us if anyone else heard him say this to Peter. This might've been in private.
Oh, it was just him?
Well, we don't know, because Peter takes him aside to say, hey, knock it off. You're not going to die. And then he says this to them, to him. And then he says to his disciples, all the other stuff.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But
that changes everything.
But it's in Matthew's gospel.
Yeah.
So at some point, maybe later, Peter told them what happened, or Jesus told them what happened, or they heard it, they overheard it. So,
Now we all know. So,
we all know. I am perfectly fine imagining Peter being like, hey, knock it off. You know what says that? And Jesus going, get behind me, Satan.
In
and
front of everybody?
Maybe. And
oh,
all the disciples are like,
goodness.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I always pictured this in my mind. Jesus is like a little high strung.
Okay.
He's like, he knows what's ahead.
Yeah.
And Peter basically saying, you kind of described it a little differently. Like, hey, don't, you know.
Yeah.
I've always pictured him being like the Son of Man's going to die or whatever. And Peter's like, not on my watch.
Right.
Like, I always pictured him being like kind of more arrogant or confident about it.
Yeah. Mm. It's definitely possible.
But you, the way you put it, Jesus interpreted what Peter was saying as like a shortcut from what he was called to do.
Right. Matthew tells us that he rebuked him. Peter rebuked Jesus.
That's insane.
It's a big deal. I mean, yeah, he's basically saying to him, like, I'm reprimanding you for talking so negatively. So, yeah, it's probably harsher than, hey, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was more like, stop talking like this.
Yeah.
Like, with that attitude, you probably will die, but you're not going to die because you're the Messiah. I don't know.
Oh,
so there's
man.
A little bit of an edge to it. I'm not exactly sure how
well,
I did
I'm
it
reading
in the sermon.
Mark's account, which is interesting in light of this conversation. Mark says, okay, he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke this word openly. Then Peter took him aside, just like Matthew, and began to rebuke him, just like Matthew. But when he had turned around and looked at his disciples,
oh, no.
He rebuked Peter.
Oh,
there you
my
go.
Goodness.
And thanks. I hadn't thought to look
Peter
at that.
Peter wrote Mark, like, that's...
Well, yeah, or Mark wrote Peter's
right.
testimony. Yeah.
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. If
that's
Mark scribed for Peter, mm-hmm. then that'd be interesting that Peter would
include
that.
You're not coming
that.
Back from that.
No.
Yeah.
No.
First of all,
looked at his disciples.
How long into, like, the ministry were they?
I mean, this
years?
Would have been nearly 3 years. If this is, or 2.5 years, I don't know exactly, it doesn't really say, but like,
I don't
again,
know who Peter
is...
thought he was. Like,
he's Petros now.
After 3 years.
No, he's Petros now.
Like, you're like, hey, Jesus, let me tell you a few, like, let me give you some tips.
Listen to me, I'm the
Look,
rock.
You said I could bind and loose some stuff.
Yeah.
Let me bind something right
yeah,
now. You need to knock
this.
Off all this negative
start
talk.
Start with this. First of all, that's the first mistake. Second of all, like, Matthew did Peter dirty, I think. I think Matthew should have put something in there afterwards that was like, and later Peter asked Jesus what he meant by the whole Satan thing, and Jesus explained. You know?
Well, he kind of does explain in the very next passage.
Yeah.
He explains, if you want to be a follower of me, this is what it's going to look like.
Yeah, but I if I were Peter, I'd be like, hey, yeah. man, why'd you call me Satan? Like,
well,
that's the worst
yeah.
thing you could have called me.
Well, this is what I tried to explain I think Matthew kind of does give us that context. It's just not, it's not like super explicit. It's
yeah.
not like a narrative motif, but I talked about Jesus being tempted in the wilderness, and
yeah.
he says almost the exact same thing to Satan
right.
directly.
Right.
And the only addition is the word behind. He's basically
yeah.
saying, get out of here,
right.
Satan. And then in this one, he says, get out of here behind me, Satan. Basically, it doesn't really work in Greek, or it doesn't really work in English like it does in Greek.
I keep thinking that Peter is getting a bad rap because he's like, he was right about who Jesus is. He's just
right.
wrong about what that means.
Right. It's also helpful to remember that Satan is both what we call the evil one, and also it is a title, the adversary.
Mm-hmm.
And so by saying, get behind me, adversary.
Oh, well, that's different.
Well, yeah, I do think he means Satan. It's exactly what he says earlier. But the meaning of it is adversary. Like, you are my enemy right now. Mm-hmm. You're acting like my enemy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't...
Unbelievable.
It doesn't lessen. Yeah, major
big
L. Yeah,
for Peter.
Don't worry, it's all up from here, except for when he denies knowing Christ 3 times. Anyway,
get behind me, Satan. In 2025, is pretty underused, but
you want it to.
I think it holds up as like a great rebuke.
Yeah.
Get behind me, Satan. Can you imagine? Like,
underused.
Yeah. When's the last time you heard that?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, like it was like a tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, get behind me, Satan. Maybe it's just because I have a...
Yeah, what? What are you talking
different
about?
Cultural background than you. But I feel like I heard it plenty.
Like, if I was mad at you and I was like, get behind me, Satan.
Oh, I think I probably say it multiple times a year to each member of my family. But not like in like a full rage, but just like, mm-mm, nah, behind me, Satan. Like, we say it all the time.
Well, there you go. I would say I say it an appropriate amount, which I don't
think
know.
I think it's underused, but a very effective rebuke. Like if
yeah.
you're trying, like you sound like you're saying it like joking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably say get behind me, Satan, as often as I say get 'em, Jesus.
Yeah. Which
yes.
is also a joke to you.
It's all the time. Get them. Get 'em, Jesus.
Get 'em.
All right. My next feeling. After the past 2 weeks is,
yeah.
Especially when you said, you know, Jesus said, don't go tell anyone. And you said, why?
Mm-hmm.
Because
my thought, and there's debate about that, but that's what I think.
Basically keep it to yourselves.
Because then people are going to want to make me that kind of Messiah, and that's yeah. not the kind of Messiah mm-hmm. I am.
I kind of feel like Jesus, or let me ask it in a question. Does it feel like Jesus, this entire time, is like keeping a secret from people mm-hmm. because no one ever, ever seems to understand what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And he's never like, hey, you got the whole wrong idea about the whole Rome thing. Mm-hmm. That's actually not what I'm doing. This is about your soul. Do you know what a soul is? Let me explain. Like, he never like comes out and is like, here's everything that I'm doing here to mm-hmm. anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just seems like he worked with a bunch of people that just never got it until he was mm-hmm. dead mm-hmm. and rose again. And then they were like, oh, now we get it.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it is kind of one of the motifs of Jesus's ministry that yeah. he speaks in parables. I almost said riddles. They're not riddles. They're parables. And often he does explain them.
Yeah. But would they have, like, I was looking at verses 24 through 28, and I know we know what that means now, mm-hmm. what he was talking about, but yep. would they have known what, like, take up your cross and follow me? Would they have known what that meant?
Go ahead.
No, I don't think that they would have, but I think I was thinking about that during your message yesterday in light of this context. If he is saying that he is going to die mm-hmm. and they're saying, or Peter is saying, no, that, yeah. that's not going to happen. He's saying, not only am I going to die, but you are also going to have mm-hmm. to take up your cross. There was something about mm-hmm. the emphasis on take up your own cross.
Yeah.
That when tied to what he had just said about his own fate, made more sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it would have been received. It's not yeah. great news, yeah. especially if they thought he was talking about a literal cross, which many of his disciples would have died that
yeah.
way. But yeah.
There are some little parenthetical asides by some of the gospel writers. I'm thinking of one in particular where John is describing Jesus clearing the temple, and he says, rebuild this temple, or tear this temple down and rebuild it, yeah. and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then John says, they didn't know it then, but he was talking about his own body.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think Jesus did that a lot. I think it was him seeding the ground yeah. a lot of the times with concepts and thoughts that would never have made any sense until the resurrection, and then it all started to click into place. I think that is the story of the first yeah. few years of the church, was them all putting pieces together yeah. and being like, oh. And with the Holy Spirit's help, they began to understand things that they never understood yeah. before. That's why he yeah. said that thing. That's why he did that thing. That's why he cursed that tree. That's why, like, I think it all would have clicked into place. And
yeah.
that's probably why the apostles played such an important role in conveying the gospel message, mm-hmm. because they were the ones who heard all these yes. things and could now say, okay, here's what Jesus taught us, and now we know this is what he meant, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I get it. I just... If I was one of the 12, in 3 years, I would have been like, I don't understand like 85% of what you're saying. Can you sit me down and explain what it means to give my life up so I'll save it? What does that mean? Can you explain it, please?
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how much of it was simply these like teenage boys not wanting to be the first one to admit
yeah.
like that they didn't know what Jesus was talking
oh, yeah.
about.
Did you understand
Man.
That? I
yeah,
totally
like there's that,
that
meme of from Parks and Rec of Andy saying like, I don't actually know what this is, but at this point, I'm too afraid to ask. Like, I kind of feel like there was a lot of that going around
yeah.
as well. And I'm sure they were having these side conversations all the time. The disciples
sure.
were like, did you get what he was talking about yeah. there? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it clearly was on purpose. And mm-hmm. again, to go back to that idea of him not telling him, don't tell people I'm the Messiah. We do see instances where the crowd tries to forcibly make Jesus their king. And I don't know how you do that, how you forcibly make someone your king, but imagine that they did. Imagine that they got him, they brought him to Jerusalem, and they set him up as a king. That would incur the wrath of Rome and would potentially have him executed far before he's yeah. actually mm-hmm. done the work he needs to do to prepare the way for that.
Yeah.
So there are alternate universes where Jesus was where Jesus was unable to complete his mission because he was too explicit. Those universes probably don't exist. Bad expression, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, there's ways of imagining how things played out where had Jesus been straight up and explicit, either he never would have gotten a following.
That's right. That's
all,
what I was about to say.
Or it would have, they would have completely, it would have ruined the whole thing somehow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I wonder if it was because if he was like, let me explain, this has nothing to do with Rome.
Well, but it does though. But that. But sorry, it's a little. Continue. This is about salvation
forever and for everyone.
Way more than yeah.
If anybody would have been like, "Yeah, I'm good with that,"
right?
Or they would have been like, "Wait, yeah, but first Rome."
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, they were looking for a king. They're like, yeah. "We want to be free again. Yeah. We are in Egypt in the slavery. We need a deliverer to bring us to freedom." So yeah, if he had said, "It's not the kind of freedom you're thinking of. It's in fact, you're all going to have to die to yourselves."
Yeah,
like I don't know that people would have been down with that, yeah. And except this small crew that dwindles further by the time that Jesus is finally crucified. It's like a handful of disciples that are even still around. And then it all begins again to grow after the resurrection.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah. There's a passage in John, and we're doing this John class, so I'm having trouble switching between John and Matthew in my mind, but there's a passage in John where it's when he's talking about eating my flesh and drinking my blood.
Yeah.
Another example of another people thing. Like, what?
I was
yeah.
just were you thinking about that? Example. Yes.
And at some point, everybody starts leaving, and then he goes to his 12, the core disciples. He said, "Are you guys going to leave too?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "Where else would we go?"
Yeah.
And implied in that, in my opinion, is like, we don't have any clue what you're talking about, but you got the words of life.
Yeah.
Like, we want to be with you, so we're going to stick with you even though we don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine not understanding something for 3 years and sticking with it.
Would you do that if you saw the guy heal people, raise from the dead,
I guess,
speak the truth?
But I'd want to know way more than what these guys led on. I'd want to be like, "How'd you do that? Tell me how you did that, and how do I do that?"
I don't know. Maybe you are a product of, what is it, the Enlightenment, or, you know, like we want to know. We're not very comfortable with mystery.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if, you know, they're watching him do all these miracles, and yeah, he's saying stuff they don't understand, but it's all part of the mystery to them.
Yeah.
And what that would feel like to be invited into the mystery.
Yeah,
like.
Right.
And be taking it all in, but not with like a scientific brain. Like they were not like us.
Well, I mean, yeah, imagine.
I know, but that'd be cool for like 6 months.
No, I don't know. It's like, imagine you're a peasant fisherman, like poorest of the poor,
yeah,
in Galilee, Nowheresville, Capernaum. Like you're a nobody. And then suddenly like a new Moses says, "You want to be in my inner circle?" And he starts doing miracles, and he starts like having command over the waves. And he's like, I mean, I'd be like, "I'll go with you anywhere.
Yeah.
I'll do anything with you. Please tell me how to continue to be a part of your inner circle."
Yeah. And if the stuff you say doesn't make sense, that's okay.
Sure.
You just
it's probably a me problem.
Walked on water.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's probably a me problem.
Yeah.
You said simple faith is the foundation of the church and the way of Jesus is the way of self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
So my question hearing that was, how do I train myself to resist Peter's shortcuts and embrace Jesus's path of the cross? Because that's, he says, in order to follow me, you got to take up your cross. So how do I train myself to avoid shortcuts? Because like I said, I resonate with Peter a lot, and he gets it half right.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I would love to be half right all the time, you know? Instead of like all right 4% of the time or something.
Oh. Okay.
So how do we avoid the shortcuts from Peter and embrace Jesus' path of the cross?
Well, this is why when I talk about discipleship or following Christ or being even a Christian, I think of it in terms of a whole life reorientation, a whole life surrender versus just some new label that you can add on to your list of other things that you're into. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think looking at your faith as a complete fresh start, and I'm starting from square one and I'm having to relearn how to even be a human. Like, if that's how we look at our faith, then I think learning to walk in the way of Jesus at least is a little bit more explicable because we're starting with self-denial.
Yeah.
Versus, I've got my life, I've got my ways of being, I've got my stuff that I'm into, I've got my money, I've got my family, and I'm going to add Jesus into that and see how much do I have to change to kind of be a part of this club. Like, there's completely different ways of looking at things, and the latter in that example, I think, is a lot more the shortcut way versus the other way, which is to say, I'm going to literally give everything to you, including my life. It's all yours.
Yeah.
I don't know. That doesn't fully answer your question, but that to me is one way of thinking about this. It's like, it's a fundamentally different way of thinking about what faith even is in Christ.
Yeah. The whole, I think maybe that's another byproduct of it being 2025. Cause I don't know if I was with Jesus, maybe I wouldn't want to do shortcuts, or maybe, I don't know. Like in the culture we're in today, it's like, I want to do everything I can to be the most, whatever, most successful. Mm. Even if that means there's corners to cut, or even if that means like,
right.
Going about things like the right way or the long way or the hard way or whatever, that's not like fun or natural for anyone.
No, and especially not Americans in 2025, but so, just in general, human nature.
But the act of the path with the cross is what trains you for the path of the cross, I think. Mm. Like choosing like, all right, I am going to surrender. I am going to obey. I am going to, it's not what I would prefer, and I'm going to put that down. Self-denial.
Sure.
Like doing that
right.
is what trains you for future iterations of, sure. of that happening.
Surrendering teaches you to surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Self-denial teaches you self-denial. Yeah.
I'm looking at 1 Peter 4, because he's talking about the sufferings of Christ and the sufferings that we share, and it's him kind of expounding on this idea of taking up your cross. And I'm struck by some of what he says. He says, your former friends are surprised when you no longer plunge into the flood of wild and destructive things they do. Right? So that's part of taking up your cross.
No longer surprised.
You aren't who you were before. Yeah. You've changed your life. You've repented and turned around. But then it also says, most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other, for love covers a multitude of sins. Mm. Cheerfully share your home with those who need a meal or a place to stay. That's what taking up your cross looks like.
That's in 1 Peter?
That's in 1 Peter chapter 4. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm really inspired to go and read both of these letters from Peter after this Peter miniseries to see like, okay, there he was, a bumbling, ham-fisted disciple. But he's writing from a place of maturity by the, you know, at the time at which he's writing these letters. Yeah. So I kind of want to compare and contrast them. But I think that that's interesting, that taking up your cross doesn't necessarily mean like, I mean, for some, it will mean physical pain and suffering. For others, it might mean cheerfully share your home with those who need a meal or a place to stay.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, yeah, this passage of scripture, man, has meant a lot to me. And so I'm hoping that people, like I feel like this passage of scripture has like saved my life. This one, because this is, I mean, I've talked about it on this podcast, the whole like go to the cross thing. It started with this scripture where it was like, man, how disappointing would it have felt for you to follow this Messiah for 3 years and him to be like, I'm going to go die. Like how disappointing would that have felt?
Right.
Which is how I kind of felt on my sabbatical. Like, man, I'm almost done with my sabbatical. I got nothing to show for it.
Right.
And then I read this scripture and I was like, oh, all right. Yeah. I don't need a big like burning bush message. I just need the message of obedience and going to the cross.
Yeah.
And it saved my life really in a lot of ways. And so I hope people are digging into it and it's impacting them like it impacted me.
Yeah.
Can you find that episode of the podcast where you came back from sabbatical? Cause you said that like we have receipts.
What did I say?
You came back from your sabbatical saying I didn't really come, you know, to any burning bush moment.
Yeah.
But all I heard was the Lord say,
go to the cross.
Just go to the cross.
Yeah, and it was after reading this.
And for context for friends of the pod who are newer, don't really know, you just a few months later went into one of the darkest challenges of your life.
Yeah.
And that concept of going to the cross became your lifeline.
Yep.
So just to give the background.
And also, it's personal to me in a similar way. This is the scripture that I felt the Lord place on my heart when I was considering whether or not to answer the call to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
It was take up your cross.
Yeah.
It was, if you're ashamed of me or my words before this sinful generation, I'll be ashamed of you before my Father. That's in Mark, right after Jesus says these words, right after this moment with Peter, take up your cross.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing, like how we just talked about how like complicated, or how I think it's so complicated the way Jesus talks, because nobody understands it that he's with. But it does come down to, can you believe? Can you just have simple faith? Mm-hmm. That's what you said. Like, simple faith is the foundation of the church.
Yeah, that's.
And it is like, can you allow yourself to deny yourself and trust in the Lord? That's it. That's what it comes down to.
Right.
It doesn't have to be overly complicated. And I like to overly complicate things, yeah. I think. But, yeah.
I mean,
if you would have been the disciple asking Jesus to just break down his every move, I think simple faith would have been hard for you.
It would have been. I would have been like, wait, he just walked on water for like a second. How do I do it for longer?
That's funny. You'd probably be more like
faith.
You'd probably be more like
simple competitive faith.
Yeah.
You probably would have been more like a Thomas, because Thomas, like,
probably, yeah.
John, when Jesus basically says, "All right, we're going to go to Jerusalem," and they're like, "You're going to die in Jerusalem." He's like, "I know, we're going." Thomas is like, "All right, well then we're going to go die with him." And I just I read it in Tyler's voice where he's like, "All right, we're going to go too." Which I may or may not be at all what he intended with that phrase, but that's how I read it.
And it's interesting. I'll ask you, Maren, where we're going next, because you said you're preaching. But I think you're preaching on this.
You do?
The very next thing that comes is the transfiguration.
Correct. Yeah.
Talk about a whiplash for poor Peter. This is craziness.
I have to believe that it's significant, like the order.
Yes.
Because like Jesus just told them how to follow him, and it's like really hard. You have to deny yourself. You have to carry your cross. If you lose your life, or it's better to, what does he say? The whole world.
If you try to hold on to your life, you'll lose it.
Yeah.
If you what's give up your life for my sake,
what's the point
it?
Of getting the whole world if you lose your soul?
Right,
like,
that's
the hard part. I feel like the transfiguration's like, and here's the guy that's leading you into the hard part.
Yeah.
Everything that you think he is, here it is. Here's a preview of...
Yeah.
The guy who's leading you into the hard part.
Yeah. And spoiler alert, he's not Elijah, because Elijah's right there.
there with him.
And he's not Moses.
Moses is right there, so he's not those guys. Yeah.
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 So you preaching on the transfiguration.
Correct.
Okay. So I can ask all my transfiguration questions next week. Like, why is your immediate response? Never mind. Why is your immediate response, I'm going to go build three tents?
Building some shelters.
Like, do you think these glowing guys need tents?
I mean, it was hot up there.
Come on, Peter.
Hot, sun, cold?
Sun shining. Maybe it was raining. We don't know.
God's shining. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wish we could do next, like topically, not it wouldn't work with the series, is I wish we could talk about Peter denying Jesus at the crucifixion
right
away. Because you can't...
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it's that whiplash of, like, upon this rock I'll build my church, get behind me, Satan. Transfiguration?
Yeah, right.
And Peter denies Christ.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You cannot have this, like, one side without the other with Peter, you know? Yeah. And so, I don't know.
Man. Yeah. Now, that's something, like, if I saw the transfiguration, I don't think I'd have any questions. I wouldn't be like, tell me how to do that. I'd be terrified. Like, let's never speak of this again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's never talk about this part again.
Yeah, and it's another one of those things where they're coming down from the mountain and Jesus says, don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone until after I've done what I needed to do in Jerusalem.
It's a tough break, though, that he denies Jesus after the transfiguration.
Well,
it's
yeah.
It's a tough break.
Tough break, Peter. I'm trying to defend you. All right, so we're going there next.
Yeah, transfiguration.
Okay. Have you you all done with your sermon?
I'm all done. I had a major project due today that I turned in right before I came here. So
all right. So
on
you're
to the next.
Yeah. Well, on your way. Sermon's due in a couple days.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Okay. And then just family business, I guess. More family business. We've got that episode, and then we've got one more episode before Thanksgiving, right? Yes. And that's it for the year. So we got two more episodes of Between Sundays for the year.
Okay.
So
That's wild.
That is kind of crazy.
It feels crazy. There's snow on the ground, and we only have two episodes left.
We're taking the month of December off.
Can we tell people about December 28th?
Yeah. If you want to tell them.
All right. So technically, this isn't the last you're going to hear from the podcast crew this year, because we
are recording.
We will have recorded by December 28th. A special last year. If you remember, I did like a little just in my study, and I did a little meditation on Philippians 2. This year, it's going to be the three of us reflecting on a passage to kind of look back on the year and look forward into the new year. And so,
podcast style,
it will be podcast style, which is different, an experiment. Yeah. People will probably hate it, but
no,
why not?
Love it.
I mean, maybe we'll see. But anyway.
We just like everything else, we're like, this is probably going to be like 12 minutes, and we.
It was like over an hour.
Yeah.
Where we thought it was, we'd be like lowballed the time.
Always.
Yeah. We can probably cut some stuff. I think
loyal listeners, loyal friends of the pod will
be
thrilled.
Yeah.
I think others will be like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
It's not church service, so what are we doing?
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. We'll be back next week. Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God.
See you on the other side of Sunday.